Hello, everyone. Welcome to Cybersecurity Matters. My name is Christian Redshaw, and joining me, as always, is my multi-talented co-host, Mr. Dominic Vogel.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Or good afternoon. I lost track of time.
So who do we have in the hot seat today?
Well, we have our very good friend, Steve Wilson, who is the president of the local ACFE, which is the Association of Certified Forensic Examiners. I think I got that right. Steve might have to correct me on that one. But Steve is just one of the smartest people I think you and I have ever met, and he's just a great friend for us, and we're looking forward to just having a great chat with him.
Yeah, very stoked to have Steve. Yeah. So I'm going to invite Steve in to sit in this chair. I'm going to move over here. We'll bring a chair in for me, and we'll be right back. Steve, welcome to the show. It's so awesome to have you with us today.
Oh, Christian, Dominic, thank you very much. Really appreciate the opportunity to come in and speak with you guys. This is an amazing opportunity.
That's awesome.
It'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely will.
Yeah.
So tell us about yourself.
All right.
What's your story?
Yeah. So in a bit of a nutshell, so, you know, I'll go back to the law enforcement. So way back, it was in the military. Went from there, spent some time with the Delta Police Department. From there, private sector was in the banking for a bit. Worked for one of the big accounting firms.
You look like a banker today.
Look like a banker. Yes. You know what? I'm all dressed up today. I took the suit out of the closet.
Banker
took all
boss.
The cat hair off.
Looks
there.
Really good.
And then kind of jumped around a bit. And you know, it's kind of funny because I say to a lot of people now that I'd like to say I'm semi-retired. And as soon as I say that, it's like, hey, be interested in doing a one-year engagement or two-year engagement. So I'm kind of got some pretty cool stuff going on right now. I'm doing some stuff at BCIT, some contract work there.
Which for those of us that are not from this area is education, post-secondary education.
Yeah, British Columbia Institute of Technology, doing some consulting work for them. Doing my PhD in the UK at the moment. And then just a lot of different things as engagements come up. So it's been really exciting.
So that sounds really busy.
Yeah.
For semi-retired.
Yeah.
Hard to reach.
It's funny how that kind of works, right? So, but it's good.
It's kind of like you're living this reverse psychology. It's like, I'm retired, but I think subconsciously you want to be really busy. Is that what's going on?
You know, yeah, it's funny. People that know me when I say that, they're like, what do you mean? Like, you're always doing something. Mm-hmm. Every time I meet you, you're doing something different. And you know what? It's just, I love what I do.
Yeah.
So, and retirement for me is getting to travel, maybe pick and choose the jobs you want to focus on and meet lots of great people, learning.
How about golf? Do you golf?
No, I don't golf.
You don't
My
know.
Daughter's
Neither
really
do I.
A huge golfer. In fact, she was supposed to go to Arizona in a couple of weeks, but that trip got canceled. So
in terms of your areas of expertise, what are people approaching you for?
Kind of all over the place. In consulting at the innovation side, background is mostly fraud and digital forensics. So the fraud, like I mentioned earlier, so I'm the president of the Vancouver chapter of the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners. So I spent a lot of time with them. As far as engagements, it's interesting. You know, this is one of the things I was going to talk about today because, you know, going into Fraud Awareness Month next month, is that we're seeing a big increase in the amount of people that are asking for me to come in and do presentations and lunch and learns and stuff. And it's all fraud related for the most part. But it's unusual because, you know, I've been pitching this for years. And it wasn't getting a lot of buy-in. And then last year, it's like I have to turn people away. That's how busy it's getting. And it's interesting because I'm always asking, curious, like why there's so much interest in this. And it's cyber-related. And that's kind of where you guys come into the picture. It's very, they've been hit by ransomware, or they've had a data breach, and all of a sudden now as part of moving forward and putting a plan and policies in place, there's a fraud prevention piece as well. So I get kind of see both sides of it.
Yeah, and then you do the reactive side a bit too on the forensics.
Yeah, so on the forensics piece, and you know, I say this a lot of people, like when they talk cyber, still, for myself personally, probably 95% of the files I'm dealing with, it's like incident related, but it's more insider theft. So we're looking at what the employees have been doing. And if there's been an incident, they may call a cybersecurity team, but then it ends up being, at the end of the day, digital forensics, looking at their phones, looking at their laptops. And that's kind of where it all kind of goes back to, right? So
cool.
It works out really well that way.
Being in that field for so long, how has obviously technology has had a huge impact, especially in the past few years. You know, I'm assuming, you know, the field of forensics and fraud investigation used to be much more, I guess, more physical investigation, and it's now becoming more technical investigation. What's that balance like? Is it mostly technical now, or?
You know what? I would say it's probably a good balance of both, and they both kind of tie into each other. So, you know, a good example of that is, like, I do a lot of presentations on what I call 21st century fraud investigation, and it's all learning technology. How is technology applied to typical investigation? Mm-hmm. So we're seeing case management software now, even when it comes to interviewing. Like, I've had traditional interview, paper and pen, talking to people, and now they're audio recorded, video recorded. Mm-hmm. You can get the USB recorders now that people are using. You know, I've had some people even say, is it going to get to the point where it's going to be all like telecommunication, mm-hmm. and you're going to be doing an interview, and they're going to be able to tell from the way that the body language is, the way it's being videoed, that they're lying or not. I mean, it's crazy how quickly technology is kind of taking over that space.
Yeah.
But the traditional piece of being able to talk to the client,
yeah.
and be able to interview people and yeah. build a rapport,
yeah.
that's never going to go away.
Right.
It's always going to be there.
Yeah.
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 And then from the technology side, even with the client side of it, it's just being able to communicate in plain language to them that, you know, okay, yes, this is what's happened. They've basically, at the end of the day, they've used their phone, they've taken screenshots, and they've taking that information to another vendor.
Right, right.
It's just trying to explain exactly what happened in common terms for the client, right?
In terms of you mentioned March is Fraud Prevention mm-hmm. Month. So
yep.
for small and mid-sized businesses, what are one or two areas that they should really focus on or communicate either internally or as an executive or business owner? Be aware for fraud prevention?
Like, yeah.
What are sort of the main themes?
It's, you know, it's really interesting. So I think it was about 2 weeks ago, they had the 2019 report from Canadian Anti-Fraud Center about the top 10 scams that, mm-hmm. that were come out.
Yeah.
And, you know, the three big ones, we're still looking at, the three big ones were like identity theft,
yes.
Ransomware, yeah. And I'm trying to remember what the third one was, but it's all still technology based, right? Oh, phishing. That's what
yeah.
the third one was. And then you still, you look at the stats and they said it was, something like 23,000 reports last year to the Canadian Anti-Fraud Center and like a total of 460,000 million in losses total. And statistically, we know that very few people actually report.
Yes.
So we're well over. Yeah. No one ever does because
yeah.
it's become kind of like white noise or no one's
yeah.
going to do anything about it or
yeah.
I'm embarrassed. There's lots yeah. of different reasons for
yeah.
it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at the big scope, like we're talking well over like 51 million, probably more is a realistic number for the amount of people that are actually being hit
yeah.
By some type of like fraud or ransomware or phishing. And then losses, we're not talking millions, we're in the billions
yeah.
now realistically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's a huge issue. And it always still falls back to the same things when we talk about prevention. It's awareness, putting controls in place, and educating your staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let them know, like phishing is a huge one, right?
Yeah.
What to do and having those policies in place and training people up so they're aware
yeah.
of that. Yeah, it can make a big difference.
The notion of being able to, you're saying how things are underreported. I know this is a question we get asked quite a bit, both from a personal perspective and a business perspective. Is when do you report a fraud to the RCMP or if you're in the States, the FBI? You know, and not all of them are created equal. As an example. A few days ago, someone asked me, they said they fell for a phishing scam and they lost $500. And they're like, well, should I call the RCMP? And I was saying, you know what? You can call them, it'll get registered somewhere, but nothing's going to happen. You're not going to get that $500 back. What are some maybe high level guidelines in terms of when they should?
Thresholds.
Yeah, when they should report and when they shouldn't.
Well, I always try to tell people, report as much as you can.
Yeah.
No matter what it is. Even if you don't think anything's going to happen, take the time to report it.
Report.
And the reason to do that is then you're going to get a more accurate review of stats and where things are currently at. And to give you a really good example of that, so a report I did 3 or 4 years ago, I looked at what was going on in Canada and some other countries around the world. And so the UK, same thing happened there, but there were being more and more reporting. And what was happening, that it ended up becoming a political issue.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, they're going to put a lot more resources into it and try to help mitigate these
yeah.
incidents from happening.
Yeah.
It's not perfect,
yeah.
But it certainly makes it something more that the public is aware of.
Yeah.
And then as far as going from there, if other people are aware of it, then they can watch out for it.
Yeah.
If you don't say anything, then it could happen to someone else and
yeah.
they probably wouldn't do the same thing, right?
Right.
So reporting is really important.
Okay.
Obviously at an organizational level, you've got policies and procedures in place. It may not be something that you want to come out and
be more tell everyone.
Forthright about. I mean,
yeah.
you have a policy and procedure
yeah.
for doing that, which
yeah.
I'm sure you guys deal with all the time.
Yeah. The interesting thing with in this digital age now, especially with fraud, in which there's on the personal side and on the business side, and people are being hit on both sides. And one of the scams, which I think has increased since the advent of online dating, and these romance scams.
Yes.
And you hear these countless stories. And I remember one back in the my FI days when I was working at First West, where there was this story where someone had a romance with someone online that never actually met them, and they wanted to wire them a whole bunch of money, and that person did not understand or refused to believe that it was a fraud. They ended up losing tens of thousands of dollars. How is technology sort of allowing for fraud to evolve more rapidly? Because this is a very long-winded question, so I apologize. But one of the things that when we hear stories in the media, when the media reaches out to us, they say, "Well, is fraud happening more now? And why is fraud happening now?" And I always say, "Well, fraud's always happened. Even if you go back to ancient Egypt, there were fraudsters.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? It just the mechanisms now, and I guess the barrier to entry is that much lower. So it's I guess technology is serving as an enabler." In that capability.
Absolutely.
And from drawing this back, and now I realize
to make a long question.
I just realized I didn't have a question. I'm just talking here. But my original question back to the romance scam piece there, just because, especially for a lot of seniors, we hear that quite a bit. From your point of view, what are some good takeaways that people should be on the lookout for in general? Because I know a lot of people are worried about their single parents or if they're recently widowed. Like I said, it's something that we hear about time and time again.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And great question. So two points
to
that.
Sorry for being so long.
No, not at all. I was trying to think at the same time of, okay, that's good. I've got some response to that. And then the business side, I thought, oh, I've got some good stuff for that. But huge issue. Myself, personally, I've dealt with multiple investigations involving romance scam. Yeah. I've seen millions of dollars lost from people. Certainly, the technology piece has made it easier for people, and it's really easy to say to someone, "Well, have you verified? Have you checked?" But it's really important to understand that it's not just a matter of clicking on a website, seeing a photo, and then it's a quick text message back and forth. They've in a lot of these cases, they're spending months building a relationship with that person. And even though, some of the dating sites will say, well, beware of this, beware of that, a couple of things the scammers will do is, say, well, let's get off of this chat site and let's go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right away, boom.
Text or something.
Yeah, yep. And they're so good at building relationships because it's a very much social engineering.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take, for example, like recent widower, right?
Yeah.
So let's... In one example, she came in with it, so there was a huge insurance payout.
Yeah.
So I think it was just over $1 million. So she's lonely. She's got a lot of money. Mm-hmm. A friend suggests try the online dating thing. She does that. Of course, not knowing any better, she puts everything out there on her profile. Person on the other end just says, okay, this is what they're looking for. This is what they're interested in.
Check the boxes.
Check all the boxes. Yeah. They reach out to them, have contact, and the emails, and I've seen some of the emails, and I'm telling you, it's phenomenal, like poetry. Like, I'm getting sucked into some of the stuff. It's not, you think, well, the spelling and the grammar wrong. It's not like that anymore. It's very, there's so much money to be made.
Yeah.
They're very, very sophisticated what they're doing, and they lure the people in, and they'll spend 3-4 months building a relationship, and it's everything. Well, I'm stationed in Afghanistan right now. I can't wait to come and see you. We'll have long walks together on the beach, and I love dogs too, and I love kids. These are pictures of my kids. You name it.
Yeah.
They are the dream match, right?
Yeah.
And that continues.
Yeah.
And then it ends up being, okay, I'll meet you in a couple of weeks, and then, well, I can't get on my flight, I've lost my passport, or I've had a vehicle breakdown, or one of my kids has cancer.
Yeah.
Can you send me some money to help me out?
Yeah.
And then you go through the whole routine. Like, I spent a whole day talking about this, but it's so sad.
Yeah.
And they'll start sending small chunks of money, $1,000 here, $1,500 here. And then it's like $20,000, $30,000. And then the bank, wherever they're using the bank to say, well, where's this going? Are you know this person? Okay, sign this release. And then it's sometimes the financial institution will cut them off and say, well, we're not doing these transfers for you anymore.
Yeah.
The bad guys know all this. They already have a routine.
Yep.
Okay, we'll split the payments off. Take, one here, one there, and this is my lawyer, he'll help you deal with them on this side, and it goes on and on and on. You know, and it's till it's either till they've mentioned this to someone else who said, that doesn't sound right, or they've run out of money, or you know, in one case where it's they'd sent another chunk of money, they were going to meet them at the airport, and then on the way to Canada, they were detained, you know, and they come in reporting saying, hey, my spouse is detained in Sweden, for example. Yeah. Can you look into this? And right away, my first thought is, did you send any money?
Yeah.
And it'll always start with, a couple thousand dollars. And then after you get it out, it's like, half a million.
Yeah.
And it goes from there. Yeah. I see that time and time again.
Yeah.
And it goes again back with the reporting. No one wants to report it because they're embarrassed.
Yes.
If they're elderly and they've got kids that are concerned about them being on their own, they won't say anything because it could have been their inheritance. It could have been their money they were going to use for college education.
Yeah.
Their kids could get really upset and say, well, you can't handle your finances. We're going to put you in a home. So many different things happen there, right? And then it just goes on. They report it. Of course, it doesn't go anywhere because these people don't really exist.
Yes.
You know, you can trace it, but...
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Extremely, extremely troublesome. And that's where I really encourage people to report it. Go to the media. Get those stories out there because even if you're helping one person from becoming a victim, it makes a big difference.
Absolutely.
And it's not easy for the victims either because they put it on media. And I've seen it where you have other people phoning in or sending commentaries that, like, you know, you should have known better. Like, who would?
That's not helpful.
Yeah, it's not helpful, right? So it keeps people from reporting.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The other side of that I was going to quickly touch on is the business side. So small, medium-sized business, same thing. They distribute all over the world, having a tight month. The bad guys know this as well. All of a sudden, there's a big order somewhere. Say, we need to ship, you know, $100,000 worth of laptops to Dubai, for example. Of course, they ship the product. The payment shows up. Put the payment in their account. Payment bounces. And then it's like, okay, we're out $150,000, whatever, what do we do at this point? I mean, you can trace them, and in some cases, you can actually see where the money's sitting in account somewhere. But then what a lot of people don't realize is law enforcement doesn't have the resources where they just pack up, you know, get their suitcases and go chase the bad guy down.
Yeah.
You're looking at private contractors, and then, you know,
there would be like a threshold there
absolutely.
That would make it not worth it for them to allocate more resources.
No, and then they just don't have the resource for it. Like in some cases, it's like, okay, we've got a contractor over there that can go and do the investigation, but a retainer is going to be $500,000.
Yeah.
It's done.
Yeah.
And that's it, right? So it's really having policies and procedures in place and making sure you're checking off those boxes. Don't get all excited, right? I mean, it's no different if it's personal or business. It's too good to be true at most likely.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And it's interesting, you know, this, I hate throwing around the word sophisticated, but they have really graduated from a lot of the traditional advice that a lot of people have been given about, you know, spelling, grammar.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
obvious,
a lot of those obvious red flags are no longer red flags. And I even remember back, you know, going back almost 10 years, this is the early days of online dating, when I was a lonely 20-something, and before I met my wife, same thing. There was someone who I was chatting with, and again, this is 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, they said, hey, let's talk on another platform. So we texted for a while, and I was still a security professional, still, you know, earlier in my career, but I still remember that so vividly that it seemed so real. And then even at the point where they asked for money, I was like, okay, no, I got to help this person out. And I distinctly remember, you know, going to the car, and I was like, wait a second. I didn't even dawn me. Then as I was getting in the car, I was like, well, okay, wait a second. What the hell?
This is not something
here?
I normally do.
Yeah. So we go over 10 years now, it's just become that much more believable, that much more sophisticated.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. And I tell you, I've heard some stories like people actually going overseas, like to North Africa to try and help these people that, you know, they figured were real and, you know,
they're not there.
And getting in all kinds of bad situations over there. I mean, it's just horrific. Some of the stuff people go through. Wow.
It seems to me like you're coming from the right place. And you mentioned those negative comments on social media, the criticizing what a fool or an idiot these people are.
Yep.
Whereas, you know, there's a different approach, which is the lessons that can be learned from these victims, you know, whether that be the individual, you know, seniors, or it could be nonprofit organizations or businesses.
Yeah.
What are the lessons that we can learn so that we can help other people avoid
going absolutely
through this?
And that's, you know, kind of like with you guys with the cybersecurity piece. I mean, going in and putting policies and procedures in place, having those basic controls to begin with and doing the education piece. And, you know, I say this to people all the time, March is Fraud Prevention Month, but it doesn't only happen in March. It's throughout the year, right? So it should be something that's, okay, it's March.
Frauds happen.
We're going to do a lunch and learn. We're going to bring Steve in. Okay, everybody's good now, and that's it for the rest of the year. No, it's something you have to have ongoing.
That box is checked.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's got to be almost a part of your culture.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Do you see the awareness level? I'll focus more on the small and mid-sized businesses.
Yeah.
Do you see that awareness level improving year over year? Are there still a lot of people and organizations that are stuck in yesteryear? You know, the comparison I'll give is when, from a cybersecurity awareness perspective, it's hard to see whether it's improving year over year. You know, certain companies, if they're investing and doing it right, are improving. But on the whole, I would say awareness hasn't really gone up. In fact, if anything, there's still more people who are stuck in a 1995 mindset about, oh, Nigerian print scams, we can identify that. That's not a problem. Or we have antivirus on the firewall. We're good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like
that's 1995 good, but that's not 2020 good.
Yeah.
Do you see that level of awareness increasing at all year over year?
My perspective from the fraud awareness level, I will say no. And I'll say it's kind of like what you're saying. It'll never happen to us. We're small. Who would care?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then until they get hit. And then it's kind of like incident response. It's like, okay, it's, you know, or we trusted our bookkeeper.
Yeah.
The bank phoned me. I can't even meet payroll now. Yeah. Oh, no. Like, you should have really, you know, and it's like I was saying, I always try to pitch people. Like, it costs nothing to go in and do a lunch and learn, you know, and, you know, I'm going to meet you. You're going to benefit from it. Your staff's going to benefit from it. Yeah. I was not getting the buy-in.
Yeah.
But the cyber piece of it's different. And I think the big difference is, it's everywhere all the time. We're hearing about it 24/7. Like, I can go on social media, LinkedIn, and every day there's someone else getting breached. It scares people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
So I'm getting called in and I'm doing the fraud prevention and a lot, you know, we're talking about phishing, we're talking, you know, online awareness and best practices, but it's really the whole cybersecurity market and the landscape that's really been huge as far as impact, which is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to dig in more onto the forensic side and the incident response and some of the things that you get into with that and the types of organizations that you help, but we're out of time.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we're going to bring you back and dig into that one at some point if you're willing to
come
and join us.
Yeah, love to.
We really appreciate you taking time out to chat with us.
Really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you.
Right. Christian and I will be back momentarily to wrap things up.
Dominic, awesome conversation with Steve.
The man's epic.
He is, and such deep wells and deep conviction, full of knowledge, full of wisdom. You know, my big takeaway from him was just that lessons learned. Instead of criticizing people online for falling for fraud scams or criticizing businesses, let's have some compassion, let's get some lessons learned, and let's help people avoid being taken in by these scams.
Absolutely. I mean, my big takeaway, other than the power suit he was rocking there, which was fantastic. Dude can wear a suit like no other. But for me, I think one of the big takeaways again was that whole notion of how he was talking about how fraud has evolved and how technology has again played a role, both from a positive side in terms of being able to allow from a forensics perspective or fraud investigation. You know, there's the positive side of the powers technology has unleashed, but also how technology has really lowered the barrier for people to commit fraud. It's no longer just people who are career fraudsters. It's lowered it to the ranks in which people with amateur ranks can commit fraud. So it was really interesting to hear his perspective on that. You know, and just how technology has very much shaped society as it is today.
Mm-hmm. And cyber criminals and fraudsters have raised the bar in terms of their sophistication.
Yes.
Yet the bar remains low when it comes to awareness and protection.
Absolutely.
Another big takeaway here for today.
That was a juicy interview.
So thanks for watching. You can check out our podcast and other podcasts on conversationsthatmatter.tv, as well as the Conversations That Matter YouTube channel under Cybersecurity Matters playlist, or anywhere that you listen to podcasts. And we will see you next week.